It's 15 years since Sam Mendes' seminal movie, American Beauty, was released. Starring Kevin Spacey as Lester Burnham, it has become a classic depiction of the darkness that lurks behind the American dream. Joining me in studio now is Gavin Burke, who's been watching it for us. Gavin, the story is narrated by Spacey's character, Lester Burnham. So can you give us an idea of who he is and what kind of life he leads?
Well, Lester Burnham is a middle-aged man who's living in suburbia. He has a job in a newspaper and he hates every moment of his life. He has he's married to Annette Bening, who is a real estate agent. Well, she has her own company. And the marriage is falling apart, to say the least. He has whatever relationship he had with his daughter, played by Thora Birch, has gone, and he's just sleeping his way through his days. Actually, one scene on the way to work, he's asleep in the car, in the back seat. And what happens is that he just snaps. He sees Mina Savari, who is Thora Birch's friend, at a cheerleading a basketball game, falls madly in love. And that, actually, it's not that really kicks him off. It is the fact that he meets Wes Bentley, the kid next door, Ricky Smith next door, who just quits his job right in front of him. And he says, "You're my hero." That's actually the moment where he changes, because he doesn't change before that. It's when Wes Bentley quits his job. He goes, "You're my hero." And after that, he bribes his boss, quits his job, and just becomes the person he wanted to be when he left college, which is what he said, it was the time he was at his most happiest.
You've mentioned Thora Birch. She played the daughter, Janie. And we're just going to take a clip from the opening scene from the film featuring her. Maybe you could set it up for us quickly.
This clip is, she is talking to, I think this is the one where she's talking to the kid next door. Is this the opening scene? And she's talking about her father, and Wes Bentley goes, "Do you want me to kill him for you?" And Thora Birch goes, "Yeah, would you? I would have cast her in everything after that."
"I need a father who's a role model. Not some horny geek boy who's going to spray his shorts whenever I bring a girlfriend home from school. What a lame-o. Someone really should just put him out of his misery."
"Want me to kill him for you?"
"Yeah, would you?"
So that unease, that uncertainty is there from
the opening section of the film. That's a wonderful, wonderful way to kick off a film. We then move to Lester himself. We introduce to her father, the man she's talking about. And as he narrates it, he says that, you know, in less than a year, I'm going to be dead. So, well, it's not a spoiler. You know, he says it pretty off. It's a bit of a nod to Sunset Boulevard in that respect. I was disappointed that Thora Birch didn't really kick on after that, because the way she looks at the camera there is just John Hughes, rebellious teenager. She just, her eyes, the way the fringe comes down and she peers out from underneath her eyelids. Yeah, would you? It's wonderful.
She plays that nightmarish teenage daughter so well. But, you know, the film was considered, I suppose, a breakthrough movie, or the breakthrough movie for director Sam Mendes. But in comparison, Kevin Spacey was already a huge star. So where does this film fit in his career? What did it do for him?
Well, Spacey was a good name. I mean, I think Alan Ball, in his discussion with Mendes, said, Mendes actually had an argument with the producers. He wanted no real stars, because that's not what the movie is about. Because we remember this as a Kevin Spacey movie, but it's an ensemble cast. Everyone else gets a lot of screen time, and he is one of those characters. The fact that he narrates it and he's telling us that he's going to die, we kind of remember it as it's Kevin Spacey's story, but it branches out to encompass a lot more. Spacey, at that point, he had L.A. Confidential, a wonderful character in that, and he had the wonderful cameo, of course, in Seven, and Glengarry Glen Ross. I mean, he was an up-and-comer. He was a well-known But he wasn't the megastar he was now. And this, he won Best Oscar for this, and it really, really kicked on for him after that.
So we have this perfect, to the outside world, life going on in the Burnham home, and then the next door neighbours move in, the Fitz. What's the family dynamic here?
Well, Colonel Fitz, the father, is a retired Marine colonel, and his wife, played by Alison Jenny, the wonderful, wonderful Alison Jenny, she is almost comatose with depression, and he's not really a violent man. He does beat his son at one stage, but it's the underlying atmosphere in the house that has driven her down. He is a latent homosexual. He very overtly homophobic as well, and his son Ricky Smith plays up to that, and he's trying to project the perfect American family, that everyone's happy and everyone's normal and we go to church, and my son's not a drug dealer, you know, which he is. He's the biggest drug dealer in the suburb. And that, played by Chris Cooper, Colonel Fitz, he doesn't get the kudos I think he deserves in this movie. He is just terrific.
Well, let's take a listen to an exchange between the Colonel and his son, and I think it will give people a flavour of the tone of life in the Fitz family household.
Ricky? Coming, Dad.
You know I don't like locked doors in my house, boy.
I'm sorry, I must have locked it by accident. Mm-hmm. So what's up?
I need a urine sample.
Wow. It's been 6 months already. Can I give it to you in the morning? I just took a whiz.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, well, good night, son.
As you mentioned earlier, we meet Lester at a point of crisis in his life, and in some ways it might be kicked off by that moment when he sees Angela, his daughter's young friend, you know, as the cheerleader, this beautiful blonde. But they took a gamble with that, because we could have lost sympathy with Lester's character at that point, because she's very young. I mean, what is happening here? Is it a Lolita-type perversion, or is that missing the point, do you think?
I think it's missing the point. I mean, he could be as a pervert, that he's after this young girl, this 17-year-old girl. But it's more than that. It's not that he just wants to sleep with her. He believes if he does, he will reclaim what he's lost. He is, throughout the whole movie, he's trying to move back to when he was most happiest. I mean, he walks out on his job. He gets the job he worked with, and when he was in high school, the fast food restaurant. He gets the car he always wanted, the Pontiac Firebird. So if he can be with this young girl, the kind of girl he was with when he was younger, he's that age as well. It's a misguided goal, shall we say. But he does eventually, at that moment when he's going to get what he wants, he stops and he comes back and he says no. And he actually, he's a dad to her in that scene. After that, that's almost sex scene where he puts the blanket around her and he makes her a grilled cheese sandwich, which is a very homely meal, and he gives her some dad advice as well, and you really think that he's actually talking to his daughter there, not his daughter's friend.
Well, let's take a listen to Angela and Janie having a chat about their dreams and desires.
I'm so sorry my dad was weird tonight.
It's okay, I'm used to guys drooling over me. It started when I was about 12. I'd go to dinner with my parents. Every Thursday night, Red Lobster. And every guy there would stare at me when I walked in. And I knew what they were thinking. Just like I knew guys at school thought about me when they jerked off.
Vomit?
No, I liked it. And I still like it. If people I don't even know look at me and want to fuck me, it means I really have a shot at being a model, which is great, because there's nothing worse in life than being ordinary. I really think it'll happen for you. I know. Because everything that was meant to happen does, eventually.
now.
Well, Angela is actually a very interesting character. I know she's a minor character, but there's so much going on with her. There's actually a blog I came across called Andrew's New Blog, and he completely he has a theory about Angela's home life, and there's a lot of words. There's about 1,000 words where he imagines the mother and the father, because we know the father has left. And he imagines what the mother must have been like to make Angela the person she is. And it's just, it's complete theory. I mean, it's not in the script at all, but it's just a very interesting read. Andrew's New Blog, if you're interested in checking that one out.
As you mentioned earlier, you know, a shame ensemble, really, of fine performances there. Again, Mina Servais playing Angela there, yeah. But she didn't go on to do much after.
No, she had the same year she had American Pie, and then she had the American Pie sequels. But again, it never clicked on, which is a shame because she's an unconventional lead, and she's so good in this. It's hard to fault anybody in this movie. It's just a shame. It's the same with Birch as well. She did Ghost World after this. But
even Alan Ball, the creator, I mean, the heat around him at the time was amazing.
He got Best Oscar for the screenplay. He went on to create 6 Feet Under, which was wonderful for 2 seasons until it became Desperate Undertakers, and I just lost interest. It just became a soap. And then he went on to do True Blood, which I'm not interested in, another vampire show, I'm sorry. But it was one of those instances at the time where the writer's name was advertised, as used to advertise the film, which is rarely, rarely done, unless it's a Charlie Kaufman or Alan Sorkin film.
Sure. So along with the script, you know, the standard elements that we said there, the performances, but also the look of the film really stood out. Just maybe gives a sense of the visual look of the film.
Well, the American Beauty itself is a variety of rose, and the colour red really bleeds through the entire movie. The rose petals falling from Mina Servais, or when she's in the bath, she's just covered with rose petals, and of course the blood oozing from Kevin Spacey's head in the last scene. But there's also, Mendes was very clever in subconsciously giving the audience an idea of Lester's life. Bar the voiceover, he frames him smaller in the shots than anybody else. There's a scene where they go to a dinner party, and himself, the wife, Annette Bening, and the real estate king, Peter Gallagher, it's a 3-shot, but they're on stairs, and Peter Gallagher's on the top step, Annette Bening's on the middle, and he's down really small, and every frame hems him in when he's looking out of the window. The bars of the window are like a prison, and he's in these various cells, like the shower scene in the morning, and the cubicle, and actually the line, there's a reflection of the computer screen with his face in it, and there's lines of code on the screen which look like bars as well. So Mendes is giving us these subconscious cues all the time that this man is in prison.
The film did exceptionally well when it was released in 1999. Can you remind us what Oscars did it win?
Well, Ball won Best Screenplay. Mendes won Best Director for a debut, which is quite impressive. Spacey won Best Oscar for Best Actor, and Annette Bening was nominated for the Oscar. She's wonderful. I don't know. I can't remember who won that year, but
I think the phrase "she was terrific. Robbed" springs to mind. Yes, it's an extraordinary portrayal of that woman, that female matriarchal character.
It is. It's this American dream thing where materialism is what you want, and she goes for it, and she goes for it with such gusto that she doesn't realise she's desperately, desperately unhappy. I think Lester says in his voiceover, do you see her gardening chairs that match her shoes? That's not a mistake. When he tries to kiss her in the sitting room, she's afraid that she's going to spill beer on the couch. He's hitting the couch. It's just the couch. And the way she looks at Peter Gallagher over dinner, over the menu, she's like a little girl. You know, she's really, really attracted to him. And his motto as well. What is it? You got to project success. And that becomes her mantra. You got to look successful. It doesn't matter if you're unhappy or near suicidal. As long as you look happy, that's what's important.
Gavin, before we let you go, I have to remind you that Hilary Swank won that year for Boys Don't Cry. In fairness, she kind of put in an okay performance at that film. Anyway, Gavin Burke has been talking to us about American Beauty on its 15th anniversary, and the movie was distributed by DreamWorks.